Today is Monday. It is March 28th, 2022. This is part one of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Jimmy Jordan Jr. Jimmy spells his last name J-O-R-D-A-N. My name is Tom Martin. We are at the home of Jimmy here in Mesa, Arizona. And I apologize to Jimmy for messing up the first interview, and we are doing this again. Good morning, Jimmy. How are you today?
I'm fine, Tom. You?
All the better to see you. Jimmy, these part one interviews are about you and growing up and about what you remember about your mom and dad. What year were you born?
I was born in March 4th, 1946, in Boulder City, Nevada.
What were your folks doing in Boulder City?
My dad was a boat pilot for the Bureau of Reclamation, and I think my mother worked for she worked somewhere in the vicinity of Boulder City.
Okay.
And they met there.
And her name was June, is
June,
that right?
June Van Zandt Jordan.
V-A-N-Z-A-N-T. V-A-N-D. Z-A-N-T?
Van Zandt. V-A-N-Z-A-N-T.
Yeah. And there's a camp in Grand Canyon just upstream of Deer Creek Falls that's called Junebug. And was that the nickname for your mom?
Yes.
Okay.
And so was the boat.
Oh, so you guys had a boat on the lake that was called the Junebug?
Well, not when it's a boat my dad brought down Grand Canyon in 1951 was a Junebug.
That's right. That's right. The first outboard motorboat.
Right.
To go through Grand Canyon.
Yeah, it was a Smith Creth with an Evinrude.
Okay.
30 horsepower.
So let's go back, because I wanted to remember about how did your dad meet Seth Smith, who was making Smith Craft?
Well, that I don't know.
Okay.
My dad, I don't know if they met when my dad was racing boats or what my dad was doing when he met Seth. I don't know.
And that was in the 1920s?
Yes.
Okay. And so Seth was building boats back then?
I think so. I think during the war, he worked in a shipyard somewhere.
Okay.
He was a welder.
Okay.
And I don't know a lot about Seth's record or anything like that. And I don't know how they met. But
so,
when they
so
did meet, Seth was an all-around person, a welder, a builder, a mechanic. He's a real hands-on person. He's a big man, too. And my dad was into a lot of different adventures of everything, and somehow they met, and they teamed up, and Seth was my dad's mechanic. And Seth built my dad a boat, and they were racing Johnson Evinrude motors, and Seth would work on the motors and set the boat up. My dad was a pilot, a very good driver.
And this was in the 1920s?
Yes.
After the war?
Yes.
Okay. And they formed a team called the Arizona Navy.
Well, how that started, somehow they qualified to race back east. And I'm quite sure it had to be back then telegraph, but anyway. they wouldn't let them race unless they belonged to somebody or something back in Pennsylvania, the World Championships.
Okay, so you needed some sort of a sponsorship or a club or something?
Yes, you had to belong to something.
Okay.
And so they wouldn't let them unless they belonged to something. So they introduced the Arizona Navy. They started the Arizona Navy so they could go back and race.
And did they get some sort of recognition from the governor or somehow from the state of Arizona or you know, to be the Arizona Navy?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, the Arizona Navy is still going on to this day.
As a boat group?
Yes, okay. Race club.
Nice.
And it, unfortunately, there's no more outboards in it. They're all flat bottom and ski boats.
So then with that club, sort of Arizona Navy sanctioned, they took Seth's boat and drove it all across the country going boat racing.
Yes. Well, most of it was here in Arizona.
Okay.
And
so they raced mostly here in Arizona, but they also headed out back east to other sanctioned events.
Yes. Well, they had races at the Salton Sea. Mm. They had races. I'm quite sure they had them in California somewhere, but I don't know.
Okay.
And let's see, it was Mormon Lake.
Up near Flagstaff?
Yes.
Okay.
And even at one time, my dad had a boat rental place there. No more like.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. And this was before the construction of Hoover Dam in the 30s.
Yes.
And the formation of Boulder City.
Right.
All that hadn't happened yet.
Right.
So when we think of Lake Pleasant today or any of the lakes along the Colorado River, those were not in existence.
Well, you said Lake Pleasant, but Lake Pleasant wasn't made until probably the 70s.
Right.
But Lake Mead was finished up, and the dam was finished, I think, in 1936.
Yeah, so in the 20s, none of that would have been
there. Yeah.
Bullhead, none of that, you know.
No.
Any of the...
Well, they did have a race. Well, no, excuse me. Hoover Dam was already there, but they have races in Needles, California.
Okay. But
my dad never raced those, you know.
This was later?
Though. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I can appreciate why they would have had to leave Arizona to go someplace else.
Right.
Where there was water.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
to go boating. So your dad did that also in the 20s. It looks like he was doing some, he was managing a racetrack.
He had two midget racetracks in the Phoenix area.
And that was in the 1920s?
Yes.
Okay. And those cars looked like they had pretty big engines, and that's about it. I mean, they had little tires and steering wheels and tiny little body and...
Yeah, midgets were I'm trying to think of some of the motors they had. Healy's. They took some outboard motors and water cooled them, put them in midgets.
So it wasn't like you could take a V12 and put it in one of these midgets?
No, they were all actually four-cylinder motors.
Okay.
Back then.
And this was by design.
Yes, well, I'm quite sure a Model A four-cylinder was in the hunt there somewhere.
Okay.
But I don't think they made the horsepower some of the foreign people did.
Okay. So they weren't V8s. They weren't.
No,
that type class.
Right.
Okay. All right. And then
I think midget was that midget, and I think the Indy cars back then would have the bigger motors.
Okay.
But a midget looked just like an Indy car, just smaller.
Got it. Yeah, that's what's confusing me, because when I think of a 1920s race car, this is exactly what I'm thinking of, but I'm not appreciating the size difference.
Looks like a bullet with four wheels on
it. It looks like a bullet with four wheels, half of a bullet, right?
Yeah.
Or a pill, half of a pill, you know, the upper
right.
Half of a pill. But I'm not appreciating a size difference from something that's got a V8 in it versus something that's got a four-cylinder in it.
Right. Okay. Well, that's the difference. Midget, you know, just downsize.
Right. That makes perfect sense. Then how was it that your dad ended up working for Reclamation in Boulder City?
Well, that's a money might be a fuzzy deal. My dad was married before my mother for 11 years. And her parents weren't happy with my dad at all. And I think they had some pull. Well, they got divorced and my dad left Arizona. And his brother, Oakley Jordan, which was a college graduate and worked for the state of Arizona, and he got my dad that job at Lake Mead.
Okay. And your dad didn't go through college?
My dad just went to the 8th grade.
Okay.
Did not even graduate.
Okay.
He was too busy.
Too busy doing what?
Playing.
Arizona Navy.
Playing hard.
Okay. Playing hard in as a teenager in Arizona in 1910, 1920, was he driving fast cars or?
Yes, he was actually built for speed, I think.
Okay.
He was born in 1909.
Okay, so it would have been in the 20s then, that when he was 1929,
well, he was born in
1925.
He was born in 1909 in Gadsden, Alabama.
Y-E-S-T-O-N? Yeston?
Gadsden.
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 Thank you.
And then they moved out here, I think, in 1916. I wish I had my book here, but I don't. She never brought it back.
Okay.
And, of course, their grandfather was into real estate, and my grandmother was into citrus. So they bought a citrus farm here, where Scottsdale is now, is the county back then. So Grandpa had some money, and my dad always had cars, Model A's, and he was always having them built and fixed and go fast. And one time I guess my dad told Grandpa he needed a new car, and Grandpa just said, oh, they're all black and they're all Model A's, go get one. He brought back a Stutz Bearcat. I never did hear how that turned out.
Well, it turned out fast, I bet.
Well, I don't know how they turned out. Mom, I'm quite sure my grandmother had something to say about that.
Oh, dear. You take that back. Okay, thank you. That helps me in the time frame. So when he was 20, 1929, that's kind of that time frame where he was doing all that racing with Seth.
Yes.
Okay. And then he divorced his first wife and moved to Boulder City.
To work for the Bureau of Reclamation.
And is that where he met June?
Yes.
In Boulder City?
Yes.
Okay. They got married, and what are your first recollections of Lake Mead?
Oh, wow. Well, he had his own boat. It was a big cruiser, a 36-foot Owens.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about that boat.
Well, I'm quite sure he owned it when I was born, because I heard a lot of stories. And, let's see, I'm trying to think when it sank, and I think it was in 1960.
So you would have been right around 15, 16?
15. Yeah, 15 or 16. But that boat, I take that back. No, it sank before that, because he bought the biggest sailboat on Lake Mead at that time. Huh. But one back to the question was what I remember about that boat was my dad would always have his brother and some of his friends come up to Lake Mead, and he would take them for a fishing trip for a whole week.
Wow.
And I got to go on that. And I can remember one of my times we had two shore boats we towed behind the boat, and we'd get out and go fishing up with the little boats, and I was just driving one of the little boats, and Smiley Burge, which owned Burge Ford, was in the boat with me, and when I trolled past my dad, my dad yelled at me, "Slow that goddamn boat down." And Smiley Burge yelled back, "Him, don't do that. Look at the bottom of our boat, it's full of fish." And we kept on going. That remembered things like that with that boat. And, I remember going up the Grand Canyon with it to the falls and putting the deck of the big cruiser right in the falls.
That would be Columbine Falls.
Yeah, it's Columbine Falls.
You put the nose of the boat right there in the falling water.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I remember Buzzy and my sister, Buzzy Belknap, my sister and Loy Belknap, we were all there on that boat at that time.
So you could sleep on that big cruiser?
Yes, it was 36 foot long.
That's a big boat.
Yes.
Wow.
It had two Jimmy 671 Jimmy diesels in it.
Okay, so twin props?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a big boat.
Wow.
Yeah, it was made out of mahogany. It's a livestock boat, and it...
Where was it manufactured?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
And what was the brand again?
Owens.
Owens. Okay. the stories do you remember about that boat?
Well, that was it, you know, just on the Lake Mead at different trips. And and then when it sank, and I'm trying to think what year that was, but it had to be earlier than that. Because I was in high school, my dad owned the Loki, which is a 48-foot racing sloop sailboat.
Wow.
Had a 55-foot mast on it. And nobody could understand why that happened, but... I don't even remember a few times with my dad going out on it and putting the sails up. We maintained it on a mooring every day, but he would motor it around with the, it had a little diesel motor in it. And it was always fun to swim off and party on. And
Jimmy, how, going back to the Owens for a minute, do you remember its name, that boat's name?
No.
Okay. And how did it sink?
It, in those wood hulls in Arizona, well, Nevada too, the heat, with no moisture and everything, the wood splits. And when the waves come up, the water comes in.
Wow.
And everything above the water line, you can actually see through.
Wow. Because the planks are that,
yes,
gapped.
Yes.
Wow.
And you kept caulking them all the time, but that's the reason it sank, is in a windstorm.
Okay. And then did it sink in deep water or shallow?
No, it was just shallow water. It was on the mooring.
Okay.
So it was only probably 20 foot deep.
So the ropes just go down in the water for the tying onto the boat, and that's it. You know it's there. It's just down there.
There was a big chains to old engine blocks was our anchors with a 55-gallon drum as a buoy.
Okay.
With a turnbuckle on it, with a rope on it you tied your boat to.
Pretty simple. Yeah. So then did he recover that boat?
Yes, he recovered it and sold it and bought the Loki.
How do you get a boat like that up from the bottom of the lake?
Oh, they just put airbags and blow it up.
All right. And swim down, dive down?
Yeah, airbag it and walk it over to shore and then put it on a trailer, put the trailer way underwater and put it on the trailer and pull it out.
Oh, wow. Okay. And slowly pull it out so it can drain out.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the Loki under sail as a 50-foot mast, it must have moved along pretty well.
Oh, yes. It was, well, fast for a sailboat, I guess.
Was it one of the biggest sailboats on the lake?
It was. It was the biggest.
Was the biggest?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
In fact, it was on the yellow pages of the Las Vegas Yellow Pages.
Wow.
There's a picture of the Loki on the front page.
Nice.
And
And you'd need a crew to...
Oh, no.
That's, run the thing, wouldn't you?
I'm quite sure three people would be fine.
Okay.
But we never got into that. Like I said, I think... I can remember twice that I ever had sails up on that thing.
Only?
Yes. I put them up one time myself without his supervision, and he had to come and get me.
Tell me that story.
Well, a couple of my friends and I thought we could sail that boat without any problem. So without his permission, I went down there and put the sails up, still tied to the mooring, and of course they just fished face to the wind, so there's no big thing. And we figured that out. And well, let's just unconnect this thing from that buoy. And we got sideways and we went right up the lake, clear to the sand beach, and I put it right on the sand beach and got stuck.
Did you hit that sand beach at a high rate of speed?
Well, at a high rate of speed, probably 3 or 4 miles an hour.
Oh, that's not bad. And, but enough to push it up on the sand.
Didn't understand it. You better get the sails down, and I left them up. And boy, we really got stuck. So we got the sails down, but the boat was sitting at quite an angle on this sandbar. And it took my dad about 5 hours to figure that out, and he come and got me, and he wasn't a very happy camper. But when he got there, and Park Service boat, down the Park Service, we tied the sails down, and he made me motor that all the way back with the motor at a very slow speed, and he left. Made me take it all the way back. So that was the end of my sailing career. I never wanted to be on another sailboat in my life.
So I'm going to move this story on a little bit. You were born in 46. A fellow by the name of Doc Marston and Ed Hudson took them an inboard motorboat through the Grand Canyon in 1949. And in 1950, Marston took a Chris Craft, a plank boat, just like your dad's Owens plank boat, through the Grand Canyon, and had trouble with the planks cracking and water getting in, and it was a real bugger. But he heard in 1950 that there were a couple guys in Lake Mead that were thinking about taking outboards through the Grand Canyon. One of those people in 1950 who was thinking about it was your dad. And they met and they started talking, and Marston came back to run the Grand Canyon next year in 51, and your dad came along with Rod Sanderson and Mac, what was Mac's first name? Danny Daniels was on that trip.
Mac McDaniels,
thank you. So there was that team that was pulling together in Boulder City to try the outboard trip. Doc just kind of grabbed all those people and drug them up to Lee's Ferry in 51. What, did your dad ever talk about that trip?
Oh yes, definitely. That was one of his great adventures. And he had a movie of it that he showed all the time. And he went to different clubs and everything and showed the movie and really promoted everything about the Grand Canyon. Of course, he worked for the Bureau of Reclamation, which was the heart of it anyway. And because all of us, Lake Mead National Recreation area, all the way from Powell all the way to Yuma. So, yeah, he loved that trip and made a legend out of him on his first trip, and then he did other trips and other adventures on it.
Do you remember any stories that he told about that 1951 trip with the Junebug?
Yeah, he turn it over in Lava Falls, which later on we'll discuss that because I did the same thing.
and we have that on tape.
Yeah.
That 1970 story, we've got that recording.
Yeah.
But this earlier stuff we don't have. In that trip in 51, I think Doc Marston may have told him to put oars on his little boat just in case his engine would quit. And when the boat showed up at Lee's Ferry, it didn't have any oars on it.
Well, you were talking about oars. You know, actually, Doc wanted to put oar locks on them and have them tied to the boat at all times.
Right.
But my dad, like I said, he wasn't a sailboat man and he wasn't an oar man. He was an outboard man. So he didn't do that. But later on down, I think he wished he would have. But he'd never admit that.
Well, they crashed and burned a little bit, 24 and a half mile, I think, is the rapid they started into, and the motor quit. And I think that Jimmy's passenger was Mac.
Yes.
And they had paddles. And
Canoe paddles.
They didn't have oars, they had canoe paddles.
Right.
And one of the Chris Craft boats, run by a guy named Bill Cooper, was right nearby and said, "I'll throw you a rope." And your dad said, "No, I don't need a rope, we'll be fine." And of course the boat flipped and the motor ripped right off the transom and went down to the bottom of the river, the first of many outboards to go through that little journey. And they had another motor, and they got the boat, and they turned it right side up and put another motor on it and kept going. It just sounded like they had a fun, wonderful time.
Oh, I bet you they did.
I mean, they were having disasters left, right, and center, but they were laughing about it.
Well, can you imagine doing that yourself? I mean...
I can't. It's, you know, back in the 50s, the river was Wild River and full of dirt, sediment, and it was a different time. Nobody had ever done this before.
Well, you say that, but the river's much more dangerous now than it ever was. For the simple reason, it's controlled, it's clean water, and back then, you had so much water coming through it. Now we don't have a lot of water, and our rocks are not as deep as they used to be. And everything is a lot shallower. And the wrecks now are pretty much, if we had hard boats in there, they'd be hard on them. And, but back then, well, to this day, you wouldn't think about taking a wood boat through it with an inboard motor.
Right.
We don't have the clearance. We don't. You can still take an outboard through it with no problem, but not a wood boat.
not an inboard.
Right. And that's...
Thank you. I think
back then was a lot more susceptible to do. But, like I say, the adventures of it were just phenomenal. It's great stuff. And everybody seemed to get along. Was adventures for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you make a great point. I think the river was running in the 30,000s.
Oh yes, definitely.
And they were thirsty for higher water.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You had an older sister named Candy.
Yes.
And she passed away from cancer. In 57?
Yes.
1957, being the high water, and there's a letter from Doc to your dad about the loss of Candy, and he, right about that time, he sends a letter to your dad saying, "We had some pretty good water in the canyon, we had 120-some-thousand cubic feet a second. We hope to live our lives right so we get to see 200,000. They just wanted to see more and more water. because the river could do that.
Oh, yes.
And that's the Wild River that I never saw that, not in my lifetime. So they were running something very different from what we see today. I see your point.
Well, once you put Lake Powell in, it just changed the whole Grand Canyon concept. But one good thing about it, more people got to see it this way.
There is that. So it's, it's always an interesting question is, would the same number of people see it if the dam was there or the dam was not there? I don't know, but there's a lot of people seeing it today, and that's what it is. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your memories of Doc Marston?
Just listening to him and my dad talk. And I was around Buzzy and Doc talking, and Bill Belknap talking. Just listening to about different ways and different things about the canyon and about boats. And my dad was always there to give his input.
Which Doc really.
Well, my dad is real knowledgeable. And Doc and my dad and Seth Smith designed boats for Doc to start a business running the Grand Canyon. And I got to watch that come about and listening to all that. One of my deals of being brought up was listen and don't talk. And so I listened a lot about it. And that's my recollection of, and then of course, I got to come down from Whitmore Canyon through the Grand Canyon on a trip and on one of Doc's trips.
56, 57, 58-ish, or let's see, you were born in 46, so maybe 56, you would have been 10, 57, 58, 59, somewhere in there.
Well, I'm trying to think, my daughter died in 1957.
Your sister.
And I'm not sure if I was before that or after that.
Okay, but it would have been right in there.
Yes.
Somewhere. And was Spence on that trip with you, or was Buzzy?
Spence went before me. Okay. A few years.
Okay.
That was my cousin Spence Cavalier.
Okay.
And I don't know when Buzzy's first trip through the Grand Canyon for him, but I'm quite sure it was way before that.
Like you, I think didn't he come in at Whitmore? And at the end of that trip, he put his foot down and said, "Don't you ever do another Grand Canyon River trip without me at Lee's Ferry."
Oh, how neat.
He was a little kid. What do you remember about Buzzy's dad and Buzzy's mom?
Bill was a photographer. And then he had, I think it was Explorer Scouts, and a big Dodge Power Wagon Dodge truck. And he would always gather those boys up and go out and roll rocks off mountains, and I was really impressed with that. And then Buzzy and I were friends, and we were always on the lake doing something. And, Bill Belknap bought a Smithcraft from my dad, or he bought it from Smith Boat Works. My dad was a salesman for him. And they just lived up the street from my parents' house. Hmm. So we were always together. And of course, Bill was a photographer, and Fran was a nice little lady, and that was Bill's wife. And we'd go out and eat, and did a lot of lake trips.
Did you learn to water ski?
Buzzy taught me how to water ski. And him and Jim Bob Rowland were out skiing, and I could get up on double skis, and I threw one of them away, and he says, "Can't get in the boat till you get up on one." So we stayed for a couple hours, and I finally got up on one.
Wow. And yeah. There's a picture of you up on the shoulders of Buzzy?
Yes, water skiing.
Water skiing.
On one ski, yes.
How did you do that? How did you get that to work out?
He started off with me on his shoulders.
So that you could figure out what he was doing, and then this is how
just hang
do
on.
It. Yep, hang on. This is
yeah.
how I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put you on some skis, they had a tow rope, they yanked on the rope, and you either made it or you didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. And And Buzzy always, well, he's 4 or 5 years older than me. So when he was 16, he could take the boat out and go water skiing and do whatever he wanted. So, and I was fortunate enough to go along with him quite a few times.
Cool. Buzzy got into driving outboards when he was 5 or 6 or phenomenally young age. Did you do that as well?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just... In fact, I finished third in a boat race in 1955 on Lake Mead at the Gold Cup.
So you would have been 9 years old.
Yes.
Was that in the junior class or something?
Just a stock outboard class.
Okay.
And then
so I can't help but think that running a boat comes with fixing a boat, because there's always something's going to break down or you want to modify or something. And I'm assuming you would have gotten really good at that.
Yes, I did. Very good at it. Yeah, my dad wasn't much of a mechanic. And he didn't have all the best of equipment all the time. And I was pretty much a self-taught mechanic. And Mac McDonald was a good mechanic. And we had a friend called Marty Martinson, who was a good mechanic. And they helped bring me up. And so I got to be quite a mechanic in the long run. But my dad always didn't have the best equipment, like I said. And they were always breaking, so I was always having to fix them. And I got real good at it.
Did you learn how to luma weld?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did take welding school, but I didn't go into the aluminum welding.
You ended up getting a job for Mac. How did that come about? You'd mentioned that he had a junkyard store.
Oh, that was Marty Martinson.
Marty Martinson, I'm sorry.
Bought that from Mac McDonald,
okay.
Marty
right.
Martinson. And when Marty bought that, we kind of had boat motors and boats in there and everything. And it was a mechanical or trucks and car wrecking yard. You know, some of the stuff I owned wasn't very good. And so when everybody'd leave, I'd go underneath the fence and borrow parts from cars and trucks. And the dog he had in there, he and I got along real well. And so I got caught.
The dog that was supposed to bark and growl at
Yeah, supposed to keep
away.
You out of there. So I was borrowing parts from him. Well, I got caught.
By Marty?
From Marty Mortensen.
Okay.
And he told my daddy just might as well hire him, make him work for me, because he's taking the parts anyway, and I don't need those kind of parts. So I got the run of the yard for the rest of the duration, all through high school.
And was that like a tow truck kind of deal, or was it a junkyard kind of, where people would come in and look for parts for vehicles and...
All the above.
All the above. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So were you driving tow truck when...
Oh, no, no. They didn't even own a tow truck.
Okay.
But it was like a storage yard, or the tow trucks would bring them in to whatever. They had big equipment in there also, you know, and building materials, and everything was in there. So
you got a lot of exposure to all of that stuff.
Yeah, and it helped out my bringing up in the long run. But Marty Mortensen, I'm trying to think of, Marty Mortensen's Marine Service is what it was called. MMS.
MARTINSON, Martinson?
I don't know if it's Ian. I think it's Ian.
Okay.
That where were we at?
Well, I was thinking as well, your dad passed away in 69 or 70? 71 maybe?
72. I think, yeah, okay. 1972. I think I was 25 years old when he passed away.
Okay. All right. You mentioned Jim Bob Rowland, R-O-W-L-A-N-D. What do you remember about Jim Bob?
Jim Bob was a school athlete hero. He very, very outstanding individual with football, basketball. He was a natural. Very good looking man. Had a lot of girlfriends. Whenever his real girlfriend Judy would ever let him have them. That wasn't very often. But he was one hell of an individual. And when I came out of the service, I brought one of his books through the Grand Canyon. And then after that, I brought one through on my own. But he was one heck of an individual, I'll tell you that.
Jimmy, we haven't talked about your service in Vietnam. Is that something you're willing to talk about?
Well, much to say about it. It
were you drafted or did you?
No, I was drafted, yes. Okay. Yeah, I was drafted. I had a judge tell me that I should go in, and he helped me get drafted.
A judge?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I had some tickets, moving violation tickets.
For
and that, and I forgot to stop for them when they turned their lights on and stuff like that. So when I went to court, he told me that he could get me in the service and I should go. And there was no other alternative, but that it was a good idea.
looking back on it now?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. Well, I tried to join the Navy a couple of years prior to that, and they wouldn't take me because of my moving violations.
Oh.
And the Marine Corps wouldn't take me because of my moving violations. And the Army wouldn't take me because of my moving violations. But the judge had some pull, and he got me in.
Okay.
And I had no problem with it.
What branch of the service?
Army.
Okay.
So I went to Fort Bliss, Texas, did my little deal there.
Basic.
And then my AIT was automatic weapons, and we did that, and also El Paso, Texas. And then when I got out of El Paso, Texas, they said, well, your next stop was Vietnam. And I thought, well, that's not too bad. At least it's not cold there. So when I came home before Vietnam, I was going with this cute little girl, and well, she decided we were going to get married while I was in basic training. So we got married, and I went to Vietnam and spent a tour over there and dodged some bullets. I was a gunner on a duster, which is a 31-ton track vehicle with two 40-millimeter cannons on it, and I was a gunner. And we did convoys, and we did guard duties on different compounds. And we got to stay out of the monsoon over there because every time our bullets hit, they go off. So we didn't get to do the monsoon, which was great because nobody likes that mud anyway. So we did that little tour, and I came home.
And you were married by then?
Yeah, well, I got married 21 days before I went to Vietnam.
Okay.
And came back, and then I come back in 1969, and we had my daughter in 1970, I think. Or yeah, I think so.
That's Julie?
Yeah.
What was your wife's name?
Shirley.
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 All right.
Let's take a break.
Yeah. I think we're done. I think we covered the those early years we wanted to.
All right.
And I would like to thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
This will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon Oral History with Jimmy Jordan, Jr. Today is the 28th
of March 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Jimmy, thank you so very much.
Thank you.